Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the Ides of March, Anno Domini 2025, and you, you lucky people, take a stab at listening to sound bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray, I think. Yeah. Maybe somebody already stabbed me.
Having a rough times?
Yeah.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing else. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues?
Here comes
the news.
I'm so mad that September, October, November are not months 7, 8, and 9.
They used to be.
I wish whoever did that would be stabbed.
But thank you. We'll be here all week. Tip your waitstaff. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission, or FTC, said on Monday that Americans lost a record $12.5 billion with a B dollars to fraud last year, a 25% increase over the previous year. Consumers reported that investment scams resulted in the highest losses, totaling about $5.7 billion, with a median loss of over $9,000, and exceeding all other fraud categories. The second largest reported loss was linked with imposter scams, amounting to $2.95 billion in 2024. Younger people have reported losing money to fraud more than people over 70, shockingly, as 44% of all reports filed last year came from consumers between 20 and 29. Job scams and fake employment agency losses have also jumped significantly in the last recent years, with the number of reports nearly tripling and losses growing from $90 million to $501 million within just 4 years between 2020 and 2024. It's important to note that the data shared by the FTC reflects only a fraction of the actual harm scammers inflicted last year, since the vast majority of frauds are never reported. Fraud victims can file identity theft reports at identitytheft.gov and report incidents at reportfraud.ftc.gov. Also, of course, check out the frauds and scams page at soundbites.org/scams. Thanks to our good friends at the Upstate Elder Abuse Center at Lifespan. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Americans lost a record $12.5 billion to fraud in 2024. Your choices are, I was hit, I know someone who was hit, I dodged a lot more scams last year, just waiting on that check from that Nigerian prince, and hold on, you can get scammed on the internet? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. Oh, wait, you can vote at the poll at soundbites.org. Did I say that? Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. And, of course, give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
I had added something on that. According to a study from Trend Micro, there's been a 900% increase in toll road scams. You've probably gotten a text this week claiming to be from Easy Pass, saying that you have a fine due because you didn't pay your toll and to click here. They have found over 60,000 domains that have been created with something with Easy Pass in it. A few Sun Pass, a few Texas Pass, but they're going after Easy Pass, apparently, because it's the biggest. So don't believe any text message coming saying you owe tolls. Don't click on any link. Don't go to the fake website. That's only one of the latest scams that's coming out.
Right. And as we've said so many times, please remember, right now, while you're safe, right, and you're not reading one of these dire threats, go to your banking site. Go to your 401k site. Go to, you know, all of the sites where you have money and bookmark those real sites. And then when someone sends you an email that says, oh, you owe us money, instead of clicking on the link, which you should never, ever do, go to your browser, go to your bookmark, and click on the real site and see what they have to say. If you owe them money, I promise you, they'll tell you there. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. What's up, Ed?
Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
I called last week about putting the thumb drive into a Mac and it not working.
Right.
And we reformatted it into FAT32. And I cannot seem to do that. When I go to Disk Utility, it doesn't have a way to format it that I can find. I did erase it.
So yeah, in that erase option, it lets you pick the name and the file system and the formatting structure of that disk.
Right. Okay, so the formats possible are Mac OS Extended, two of those, Mac MS-DOS, and
that's it.
EXFAT.
MS-DOS.
I want the MS-DOS FAT.
Yeah, MS-DOS is Microsoft Disk Operating System, which is
that's where
FAT16 or FAT32.
Yeah, that's where FAT came from before they went to NTFS.
Okay. So I want to do that. Okay. Thank you. And then I have another question. I've been looking recently at the Kim Komando daily, whatever she, is that she puts out. And she recommends something called Incogni, and I'm wondering if you have any sense of that.
Could you spell it?
Incogni. It's supposed to go through and find everything about you on the internet and erase it all.
There are a bunch of companies that do that. Delete Me is another one. It's a service you have to pay for, and you have to keep paying for it. Because every time there's a new breach, which is every week, your information gets put out there again. So it almost doesn't matter if you pay for it once and get your information deleted. It will be back again the next week.
Because it's called the World Wide Web.
And most credit card companies already offer that type of service. There are several commercial programs that offer the same type of service. A lot of times they call it searching the dark web. There are a lot of different names companies use for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The other reality is that you cannot, in fact, scrub your data from the internet. Because in a lot, as Dave alluded to, a lot of the sites that have your information are overseas, and we have no laws that bind them. So you can tell them remove all this person's data. And they will thumb their nose at you.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention the fact that most of the bad guys have already downloaded that data, so there's no way you can delete it from them.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Right. Now, one of the other things is Google, I don't know, I don't think I signed up for something, but Google sends me emails every once in a while that says, we found your information on this page. Do you want us to delete it? And it's not there. You're not deleting it from the other page. You're deleting it from Google Search, which is where most people are looking for you anyway.
That's an EU law, the right to be forgotten law.
Right.
That you can ask Google to delete you from search results.
Okay.
So I get that fairly regularly, and I always say yes.
And then you get put back on the search results, so it doesn't matter.
And sometimes it comes back and says, we cannot delete you from this service.
Yep.
But that is free.
Okay. So I'll give that a try and see what happens. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the big podcasts I listen to, Delete Me is one of their sponsors. And in the National Public Data Breach, they found all of their own data. So National Public Data Breach was one of those kind of that went under the radar. 3 billion records were lost. Every address you ever lived at, every car you ever owned, all of your Social Security numbers, that's already been lost. It was lost several times earlier by other credit reporting agencies, too.
Right.
But they did find that his wife, who had signed up for Delete Me, was not in it. But you have to keep paying so that the next breach you're not in.
Right. We're caught one way or the other.
Yeah. So most credit card companies have a alert service where they'll alert you if new credit is taken out in your name. I use a free service from Credit Karma that tracks if anyone has applied for credit in my name. It lets me see what credit is out in my name. And that's how I found my wife put me on her car loan. and so they use the credit cards and the reporting agencies to do that all for free. I'll put a link to that up in a moment when I finish these fraud links.
Okay.
All right.
Cool, but thank you very much.
Thanks, Ed.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, getting yourself purged off the internet is not easy. So the less data you put on the internet, the better off you are.
But most of the time, it's you have no control of what data is put on the internet. The other end, especially the one from the credit agency that got breached, lost every single record of every single American that own and non-American that has a credit card in the U.S. And everything they lost, your name, your address, your social security number, your info, all the stuff they're supposed to keep secret, is exactly what the bad guys need to make a new credit card in your name.
That's exactly right. So the sort of link that Steve is putting up is important, and you should pay attention. And as he said, it's a free service, so you know why not, right? And that's the way that goes. To elaborate a little bit on the formatting issue, Windows uses a format that is for its drives. That is different from the one that Macintoshes use and different from the one that Linux uses. So if you are going to move data among them, you need a common denominator. And that is the MS-DOS or FAT32 or FAT16 format.
The file allocation table.
File allocation table was the original format that Microsoft used. And so everybody wrote a driver for that. And that driver still exists in all of the other operating systems. So if you get a drive and you format it on a non-Windows system, pay attention and format that thumb drive as a FAT32 or MS-DOS or even XFAT. I think works for everybody.
But only newer OSs in the last maybe 10 years.
Right. So be aware of that. If you've got a thumb drive you move between different operating systems, that's the thing you have to pay attention to.
And for Mac users, when you buy a brand new hard drive, it almost always comes formatted for Windows just because there's more Windows machines. The Mac will see it as a Windows disk. It will use it as a Windows disk.
Right.
But there are some Mac files, like your photo library, that don't live well on a Windows disk. Almost every disk has instructions on how to reformat for Mac, and everyone misses that. There's one brand, I forget who it is, includes an NTFS reader for Mac. So you can leave it as a Windows disk. But that's not good for Mac files.
Right.
If you're sharing information between Mac and Windows, you know, like a generic Microsoft doc file won't care what the file system is.
And a
generic JPEG photo won't care.
Right.
But your photo library structure will care and will break on a Windows disk.
Well, and to be clear, what I'm talking about is thumb drives.
Right, especially
transportable media.
Right, because you intend to copy things back and forth.
Right, among multiple machines. If you only have one type of operating system in your home, it doesn't matter.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs.
Rotten Dave. Wrong button, Dave. You're playing the opening again. Okay, it stopped.
And you. No, it hasn't stopped.
No, it just. No, it's. Oh, it's somewhere else. We're not at the time yet. Sorry.
Yeah. I started to push my little button, my 30-second button.
I know.
I wrote some code that, you know, counts down 30 seconds, counts down 60 seconds, so we can do that. Where were we? Oh, yeah, what I was talking about was transportable media, thumb drives. So if you only ever have one type of operating system in your home, you don't care. Format it however you want, whatever works. God bless you. But if you're going to share among multiple different types of operating systems, that thumb drive should be FAT16, MS-DOS, whatever your operating system says.
Okay.
But if it is a drive you're putting into your machine, a hard drive, an SSD or whatever that you're permanently installing in your machine, you should pick the native operating system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Steve is talking about. If you put in a brand new drive, it will probably be formatted for a Windows machine. But if you're putting it in a Mac, that's no bueno, right? So,
yeah.
And the same with a Linux machine. Reformat it to whatever operating system you care to use.
And there are limitations in the FAT system on the maximum volume size you can have, the maximum file size you can have. So that was the difference between FAT 12, 16, 32 as they get to bigger and bigger bits. So what I've been seeing is most thumb drives come as FAT 32.
Right.
So you can have a 2 terabyte volume size, which is great, but you can only have a 4 gigabyte minus 1 byte maximum file size. So I've got a dash cam.
Right.
And the 4 gigabyte file limit is like 9 minutes. So every 9 minutes, it has to stop and make a new file, because that's what the camera uses, and nothing I can do about it.
Right. And that's why many people actually prefer moving stuff from one computer to another over the internet,
because
you can move bigger files. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Ron from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Ron?
Hey, I just want to make a quick comment on the fraud that you were talking about. So I work for a local financial institution. And what we are telling everybody to do is go to TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax and freeze your credit.
Yes.
There is so much fraud going on right now. That number that you gave, Nick, is probably ballooned to a huger number. Every day people are trying to commit fraud.
Yep.
Either electronically, digitally, coming in. So we are advising everybody to lock your credit down. And if you need a loan, you get a password and a username, you unlock it for a day, and then go right back in and lock it down. That way you don't have to worry about someone stealing your identity and going to Best Buy and walking out with a TV and you're on the hook for it.
It used to be hard, and you used to have to pay to freeze and unfreeze your credit. And there was a federal law that said, no, you got to make that easier to do. So a lot of times you can do it right in the app. You have like a MasterCard app. Or get the apps for your credit agencies, you can freeze the credit right in your app or going to their website as well.
Right. Excellent point, Ron.
It makes so much more sense to do that. It's so easy. So that's my comment for the day. I love you guys. And, Nick, I used to work in the Big Ivory Tower where you worked. So.
Okay, now we're talking. All right.
You guys have a good weekend. Thanks.
You too, Ron. Have fun. Oh, Lordy, that ivory tower.
Yeah. So if you're older and don't need to get new credit very often, that's a lot easier. But if you're young, my son just bought his house last fall, and now he has to put a roof on it. So there's always something new that you need. I love that commercial for one of the insurance companies where the guy, here's the keys to your brand new house, and then the guy rolls up, here's a furnace that missed inspection, and then the next guy rolls up with, here's the seed you're going to need from your lawn, and then the insurance company comes up and says, here's your policy, you better look over this and make sure you sign that. And they go, well, what's the problem? I skipped the line.
Yeah.
The camera pulls back, and there's 50 other service people coming up with the next thing you're going to have to buy.
Yep.
Even if you buy a new house, there's always something you have to do.
Always something. My daughter bought a house, and it opened her eyes.
Yeah. And her wallet.
And she works in a bank. She shouldn't have known half of this stuff. But yeah, it frees your credit. It takes a second when you use the app or whatever. And so it's important, and it's a way to keep your financial health. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rick from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Rick?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
And the same to you.
Question. I'm looking to buy another printer, like I guess a laser one because of the cost of the ink. And I'd like a recommendation for one that would be used for Chromebooks, Macs, Windows, and Linux Mint. Would you suggest something?
Almost any printer will work with all of those operating systems.
Especially if you get a Wi-Fi model.
Right. If you get a model that connects to the internet.
Well, to your local network.
To your local intranet. And that can be either via Wi-Fi, which is easiest, or with a cable, with an Ethernet cable. Once it's on the network, all of those operating systems are capable of finding it. I know that a Chromebook and a Mac and Linux will find it automatically. You don't have to do anything. A Windows machine, I think you have to do it by hand.
It can be a little tricky to set up Wi-Fi on a printer that doesn't have a screen where you can type in the password. So most of the times, those types of printers either use an app on your phone or you plug it USB into a computer and set it up for your Wi-Fi network.
And then you can unplug the USB.
Yeah, I was more concerned about, say, brands or something like that, or they're, you know, like as a Canon or a Brother or...
A Brother has been good to me.
We've always liked Brother at our shop. You get the quality of an HP at a lower price, and especially the consumables are often lower. So HP has been the king of printers forever. In fact, Dave, you still got your LaserJet 4 that's been 30 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just put one in for a customer who needed a 30-year-old printer to print from her 40-year-old computer.
Yeah, and it's got the dual trays, and
a lot of printers now, you can put multiple trays on it and be able to have different types of paper
but
loaded.
In terms of brands, Canon, Brother, right now, are the ones I would recommend. HP just had a thing where they bricked their own printers. But for the longest time, they had a thing where if you used non-HP ink, it wouldn't print.
And a lot of printers have done that now.
That they had an update that now also locked out HP inks. So my suggestion is go with Brother or Canon.
And some of the very low-end, very cheap printers, usually the $100 or less, require the printer to be connected to the internet and require you to have a toner subscription.
Right. My Brother printer keeps asking me to do that every time I log into the...
Right. Some of them are optional. We found this Canon, this cheap $49 Canon laser printer. Oh, that's great. No, you have to be connected to the internet. You have to have the toner subscription. So every month you get a new toner cartridge for $50.
Whether you want it or not.
Yeah.
So if you
print that much, it's great. But
right.
No.
For me, it's Brother right now.
Yeah.
All right. But one more quick question, if I can?
We can get the question, and we may not get the answer till after the break.
All right. I'm moving to Linux Mint on my old Windows machines. Is there a good antivirus or stuff? Spyware and malware bytes don't seem to work on...
Yeah. Hold on. We got to take a break. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Rick from Pittsburgh, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We'll be back with Rick and a lot more of your calls in just a couple of minutes. So don't stray too far. We'll be back.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we still have Rick from Pittsburgh on the line. You still there, Rick?
I still am.
Okay, so in terms of antivirus programs for any version of Linux, right, any version, Linux is less prone to catching viruses or most malware than a Windows machine, but you should still protect it. Mm-hmm. And the easiest way to do that is to head on over to Security Tango, our Security Tango site at securitytango.com, and you'll see the menu across the top. Under Let's Dance, there's the Linux Lambada, And you can follow that to add things like RK Hunter and Check Rootkit and Clam Scan and then Fresh Clam, which will keep your system safe from regular viruses and rootkits and all of that stuff.
Most of the threats these days are fake virus warnings that come from ads on websites. So the biggest way to keep your computer safe is be vigilant about what you click on and what you believe.
Right, and I was going to add, many of those now are add-ons to your browser. And so, you know, if somebody says, oh, add this to your browser, or we'd love you to, you know, if you really want to see this site, you need to add our toolkit. Do not do it. Our toolbar. Do not do it. 99.9% of those are just attempts to steal your data, because once they have access to your browser, they have access to all of the passwords that you have saved in that browser or that you will type into that browser later. And then they can steal all your information from, for example, your banking site or wherever. So be very careful what you add. The biggest threat to your computer is you. It used to be virus writers.
There are still those old viruses flying around.
Right, which is why you want to run antivirus software. Absolutely. And there are still malware writers out there, but most of them are writing things that you would have to install yourself. At which point, the computer doesn't consider the malware anymore. Right? You installed this.
Yeah.
It assumes you're smart enough to know it's not malware. So the biggest threat to your computer is you, and the biggest security feature in your computer is you.
That's why most program installers used to say, turn off your antivirus during the install, because the antivirus program can't tell the difference between you installing a good program and you installing a bad program.
Right. So,
thanks a lot.
Yeah, in terms of Linux, you're pretty well set to begin with, but dense the Lambada and you should be fine.
Especially when the Windows the message says your PC is infected and call Windows support.
Right, and you're running Linux Mint.
So that means the bad guy didn't take an extra 5 seconds and look up your user agent.
Right.
Not only are they bad, they're lazy.
I got one of those on my Chromebook one time.
Yeah.
Here at the show. It came up and said, your Windows machine is infected. It was a giant red. It filled my whole screen, and it was blinking, and it was horrible.
The more dire it is, the more fake it is.
Yeah, right, exactly. All right?
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, thanks, Rick.
Yep.
Yeah.
A lot of people try installing ad blockers to block those malicious ads, but more and more websites won't let you into the website if you have an ad blocker on. I just tried to go to the weather site to see what the wind is this afternoon.
Right. Some of them just want to twist that knife a little bit.
Yeah.
Because there's a link that says, continue without supporting us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
But what's really annoying is when you turn off the ad blocker and then you immediately get attacked by a malicious ad.
Well, exactly.
Because the websites don't know either. There's millions of ads every second just get fed into the system.
Right.
And there's no human oversight. There couldn't be. So the ad industry is trying to automate some way. Hope maybe that'll be a good use of AI. But now the bad guys are using AI to make the malware that gets past the other AI that's looking for the malware.
Right. All right. While you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ, it's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. I will read this week's Google News. Google's venerable 2015 Chromecast attempted to self-destruct earlier this week, upsetting a huge number of people who were still using the decade-old streaming dongles, which still work fine, by the way. Google was seemingly caught off guard by the devices glitching out all at the same time, but it promised to address the problem, and it has. Google says it has a fix ready to roll out, and most affected devices should be right as rain in the coming days, assuming you never hit the reset switch. If you left your 2015 Chromecast or Chromecast Audio alone to await a fix, you're in good shape. If not, well, you're not. Google has gotten its first taste of the remedies that this administration's Department of Justice plans to pursue to break up the tech giant's monopoly in search. In the first filing since the election, government lawyers backed off a key proposal submitted by the Biden DOJ. The government won't ask the court to force Google to sell off its AI investments, and the way it tends to handle Android is changing. However, most serious penalty is still intact. Google's popular Chrome browser is still on the chopping block. The DOJ is asking the court to force Google to promptly and fully divest itself of Chrome, along with any data or other assets required for its continued operation. Of course, Chrome is built on Chromium. Never mind. Researchers have discovered multiple Android apps, some of which were available in Google Play, after passing the company's security vetting, that surreptitiously uploaded sensitive user information to spies working for the North Korean government. Samples of the malware, named CoSpy by Lookout, the security firm that discovered it, masquerade as utility apps for managing files, apps, or OS updates and security device security. Android users should give careful thought to any app before installing it, particularly if it doesn't come from the Google Play Store, although some of those were in the Google Play Store. Google is continuing its quest to get more people to use Gemini, and it's doing that by giving away even more AI computing. On Thursday, Google released a raft of improvements for the Gemini 2.0 models. As part of that upgrade, some of the AI's most advanced features are now available to free users. You'll be able to use the improved deep search to get in-depth information on a topic, and Google's new reasoning model can peruse your search history to improve its understanding of you as a person. Let me repeat that last part. Google's AI can see your search history. Have you deleted your search history yet? Give us a call. Do that first. Then give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
The fact that you can look up your own search history to see what you searched for last means that so can they.
Well, exactly right. Exactly right.
Duh.
But now it's an unregulated AI that has access to your search history. Lord knows where that's going to end up.
Can of worms there.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. We've been seeing this since the very beginning. AIs an AI illustrator user would put this politely. AIs hallucinate. The rest of us call those lies. And
alternative facts.
The alternative facts, yeah. And so what you need to do is when you get information from an AI, you have to vet it. There are a number of students, including graduate students, who really, really, really should know better, who have put out papers that they let an AI write for them, and they never vetted it. And it hallucinated all over the place in the middle of it. And so you need to be aware that AI is not ready for prime time. You know, it's not fully cooked, and yet we're still using it for everything. Name me a company that isn't adding AI into itself somewhere, any large company. AI is the new hotness, you need to be aware that it's not always right. People talk a lot about AI for programmers and how great it is. About 90% of the time when I use AI, when I search for something on Google, the first response you get is an AI response. It is almost universally wrong when I'm looking for a programming thing. Almost universally wrong. And you would think if a computer program could get anything right, it would be programming. But apparently not.
Apparently, I've heard if you say that didn't work, try again, you get better code. Steve Gibson's talking about, and he writes in assembler. maybe that's what it is, that the AIs know assembler better.
No, I'm writing crappy little programs in Python.
Yeah,
it's not rocket surgery. It's easy stuff, and it lies to me all the time. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Jim?
Hello. I use AI to generate images, and every once in a while, I put an image and generate code, and I don't know what the code is, and I don't know how to use it.
Yeah, I don't know which one you're using, but some of them apparently are producing the printer code.
PostScript?
PostScript.
PCL?
Is it Python?
It could be Python, but if it's an image.
Can you understand the words in the code?
Probably not.
Yeah. So then it's probably not Python, because readable words in that.
Right. It could just be images in general are made up of bytes, right? And so those bytes have numbers associated with them. And if the image generator screws up, it just starts spewing random numbers at you.
Machine code.
Sometimes you can add in JPEG format or whatever format you're looking for to your search query.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, you can do that.
Never thought of that.
The other thing is take a close look at the images that are being generated. Often hands have too many or too few fingers.
Yeah.
Often I've seen extra arms on people, all kinds of stuff.
I just read about you can buy a ring that has an extra finger on it. So if someone takes a picture of you, there's too many fingers on your hand, so obviously that was AI generated. So you have plausible deniability to do anything you want.
I like it a lot.
Well, I use AI quite a bit, and what I do, I write something, and I have AI rewrite it, and they come out with such fantastic grammar and language way beyond my capability.
But always edit.
Yeah.
Always edit, because it may have hallucinated.
Apple got in trouble for one of its commercials that showed that. This guy writing a crappy letter. Hey, bro, here's the report for next week. And then he told Apple's AI to make it more professional, and it did. And the boss loved it. So there was so much outrage about, does that mean you're encouraging people to be, crappy writers? They had to pull the commercial.
Yep.
I know it. There's a can of worms there waiting to bite us.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying AI is bad. I use AI myself. I think AI is good, but it needs to be vetted. It needs to be edited by you.
Yes, that's for sure. Well, yep. So if I copy that code and there's no place to paste it or any other program?
No, because what it likely is, like I said, the image itself is made up of computer codes.
Yep.
And if it's screwed up somewhere in the middle of generating that code, it'll show you the rest of the code, but it's useless.
Okay. I thought there was some place to put it so I could generate the image after from the code.
Well, you could paste that code back into the AI and ask it what it is.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah, exactly. But generally speaking, what it means is there's been a glitch somewhere in the code generation, in the image generation, and now it's just showing you the codes that it would have made the image out of, but because you've only got, it's like having a third of the image. You can't put it together right.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. It's been very helpful. And I like that JPEG idea. I'll have to try that.
There you go. Have fun, Jim.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. And it's not just JPEG, right? It's pings and whatever.
Yeah, whatever format you want.
Whatever format you want.
I guess I'm old. JPEG was the format of the original format for the web.
As opposed to GIFs, I guess. GIF-GIF. And yes, it's properly pronounced GIF.
I know a guy that pronounces it JIFGIF.
JIFGIF.
So whoever he's talking to, whatever they think it is, I'll pronounce it both ways.
Right.
Okay.
And the reason it's pronounced GIF, and this is the hill I will die on. The reason it's pronounced GIF is because the guy who created it, he said it was called GIF because choosy users choose GIFs.
Mm-hmm. I love GIF.
There are few good computer puns. Respect the pun.
I read someone rebuked that and said, what if the Almighty came down from heaven? I'd say, hello, Jod.
Okay. and so do you call it a graph?
Yeah.
We can go either way on that all day long.
Yeah.
The fact is, he called it GIFs. Because it's a pun.
It's a pun.
Respect
yep.
the pun.
You didn't have that pun.
Is all I'm saying.
I just asked somebody's AI to generate me a woman dancing around a fire.
Yeah.
It's she's in the fire.
It's in the fire. AI doesn't always get it right, so
rarely gets it right.
You see, it's a little more obvious in a picture, assuming you're counting the fingers. It's a little more obvious in a picture, but when you're writing text and you have AI, if you have AI massage it, it's usually pretty good. If you have AI write it, you really have to edit it because it could be wrong. In particular, if you've got any sort of citations, it often makes up citations. And that's what screws up a lot of grad students. A woman was getting a bunch of calls. She's a doctor, and she was getting a PhD in something. She was getting a bunch of calls about her paper that she'd written. And she said, you've got the wrong person. I did not write that paper. It turns out somebody had an AI-generated paper that they wrote. It lied and created a paper by this woman. Other people picked up on that reference, added it to their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Now it's in the system. Now every AI is using it as a reference. And the thing did not exist.
You know, it's like telling a story going around a campfire.
Yeah, telephone, the old game of telephone.
Yeah, each time you call somebody else or tell the story to the person next to you, it gets embellished that much more or changes much more.
What's the Terry Pratchett quote? A lie can run the world three times before the truth gets its boots on?
So be aware. You know, we're in the world of AI, and there's a lot that AI is very good at. So you know, you use it sparingly in those places where you're not sure.
It's no different than the World Wide Web. I mean, there's good aspects of the web which make our lives day to day very help. You know, it's out there. It helps us so much. You know, get information around book doctor's appointments and everything else. But then there's also the dark side.
Right, right.
So, you know, it's a double-edged sword, folks, and AI is no different.
Yep. Oh, I should mention this week's, for those of you who join us in the Soundbites Lounge every week, this week we're going back to the real lounge, I think. Check the webpage, soundbites.org/lounge, to see where we're going to be. I'll put a link in there.
Just as we got Dan onto Google, the Matrix.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
Google Meet for Cider. And they all like it because they can have more than four people on their screen.
You can have... I just did a thing yesterday with like 15 people on the screen.
It depends on their internet and their graphics card.
That's exactly right. In fact, on my new machine, I have a Radeon, much nicer
graphics
much
card.
Nicer graphics, much nicer graphics card. And so, there's a lot that it all depends on, particularly, and it's, again, a limitation of the fact that the lounge itself goes through a web browser, right? So you're limited to your system's capabilities.
Yeah.
With the Matrix thing, you can do a lot more because it's an app. You can still run it through your web browser, and you're still limited to all of that stuff. But it gives you more options on the app. But we will be going back to the lounge this week for a while. Who knows? A while could be 1 week. But we'll see. So
I just like that we could say we're meeting in the Matrix.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. And I suspect we'll get back there. But what I like about Mastermind Lounge is it's much more private. It's shut during the week. So I like that. Anyway, those are the things that... So we'll be returning to the actual lounge this week. Help me remember to repeat that in the second half for the people who don't listen to the first half of the show. The slackers who don't catch the first half of the show.
Well, we've got kind of a split audience.
Yep.
You know, we've got a number of folks that get out there and, you know, doing their errands or whatever, and then they come in on the second half. Whereas we got some folks that are the early bird people that want to catch the first half of the show, find out the news and everything else, the topics and that we're talking about, and then go off and do their errands and catch us here and there, maybe in and out of the car.
And, of course, there are the many, 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 many hundreds of people who listen to the podcast.
Yep.
And I would very much like it if you folks would learn to be vote in the poll as well. And, of course, you know, again, we don't have a mechanism for you to call in during the week. We are only a call-in show on Saturdays. But, you know, save up your questions and give us a call. Of course, for some people, you know, we're on at 2 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that. And
it's a little rough.
If you're just too weak to get up and listen, I do understand that.
Yeah, it's like the eclipse. Yeah, this is the best eclipse, but it was 3 in the morning.
Well, that wasn't the problem. I assumed that there was going to be cloud cover.
Yeah, that was the other thing, too. Did you see the picture from the moon?
Yes.
The Firefly lander took a picture of the terrestrial eclipse.
Right.
While we on Terra saw the lunar eclipse.
Yeah. The blood moon.
Right, yep. Yeah.
That was so unique in color.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, it was Pi Day.
Yep.
It was Einstein's birthday.
Right.
It was Hawking's death day.
Right.
And it was a full blood eclipsed moon.
Right. So whenever there was a lot going on.
Yeah. And whenever there's a great astronomical event, it's cloudy or the middle of the night.
Right. Or both.
Or both. Yeah.
We're in Rochester. But yeah, today is the Ides of March. And so we're here. Taking a stab at doing this show, but I'm bummed. Thank you.
Yeah, because right now the parade's just got
parade's started. Getting underway. Starts at 12:30.
Yeah, it's on its way.
Yeah, so it's been moving along for a while, and that's going to make it hard to get around.
The inner part of the city, East Avenue and Main Street, and that you might want to kind of avoid that area for a little bit.
When we were on the other station, it was very hard to get to the studio.
Yeah,
trying to cross Main Street.
Yeah, that was a unique challenge.
I always went early on those days.
Yeah,
a unique challenge.
Yeah, it was. But you know, the challenge here is for you to give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
We'll go back to something we were talking about earlier in the Google News. Both Google and Apple removed dozens of apps from the App Store in the past week or so. Interestingly, for opposite reasons, one of them was a malicious app that had a malicious payload in one of the plugin kits that developers use. You know, I need a routine that can display a picture. Well, I'll pull this kit off GitHub. And there's a malicious payload in that hub that doesn't get activated until the app is already through the vetting process.
Right.
And so they got removed. That was downloaded a few hundred million times. And then there was another one where it had a malicious ad payload that claimed it had so many viewers so they could get money from the advertisers that was fake.
Nice. All right. That music tells us that the first hour of this show is history. It's in the books. It is a dead parrot. But do not despair. There's an entire another hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. Another hour of Dave Enright. Another hour of Steve Ray. Another hour of me, Nick Francesco. And another hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the Ides of March edition of Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's the Ides of March edition of Soundbites. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free, 800-790-0415. Just like Marshall did from Henrietta, New York. What's up, Marshall?
Hey, Nick. Dave, Steve. I taught at RIT for a long time. And during the time I was there, I was totally on Microsoft and PCs. I created several external hard drives that I saved things to, and I had several accounts on my PC. After I retired, I switched to Mac. And I want to move my photos on all of those devices that I have left in my wake onto a local server. But the Apple operating system doesn't seem to like this. They want to maintain a library on my iMac hard drive, and I just don't know what to do at this point.
Well, that's the Photos. That's the Photos app, which is maintains a library. That library can be on an external drive. It doesn't have to be on the local drive. But the simplest solution is don't use Photos if you don't want to keep all your photos in the library. You can just open the desktop window and see the photos in that folder. There's a little slider bar in the bottom right corner of the window where you can make the icons bigger. You can view as icon, so you can see them larger as well. So you can manage the photos yourself in the Finder windows as well.
So just in one big window and move everything there?
You can make multiple folders based on the date of the file, or folders based on the event that you're working in.
Okay, as you might expect, I have lots of duplicates because of the way that I've handled it in the past. And I was the only reason I've stuck with Photos is I thought maybe it would help me eliminate the duplicates over time.
There is a duplicate finder option built into Photos. There are also third-party duplicate finders that will scan your hard drive. The biggest problem with it is they find the duplicates and then show them to you to let you decide if they're really duplicate or not. So is it the same picture, or was it just that picture was taken 2 seconds apart? Or the file name is the same because they came from different cameras.
Right.
So there are ways to do duplicate finding duplicates in the Photos library, and the Photos library can live on an external drive if you want it to.
They seem to warn against doing that because it doesn't create some function that they want, and I can't recall the warning moment.
If the external drive is not formatted for Mac, APFS or macOS Extended Journaled, what we used to call HFS Plus, it's fewer syllables, then you may not get the Spotlight index made, because it has to be a Mac drive for indexing. So it would make it hard to search for photos, which may make finding duplicates hard as well.
Okay, so...
But if it's an external drive you're accessing via Samba, then it would be... What's the Samba file system? That might be Mac enough for it.
Uh-huh. Well, okay.
You can try it with a small library and see if that works.
Yeah.
Server message all block. Right.
SMB, yeah.
SMB.
So that's how you access a non Apple server from an Apple or from Linux too. So SMB is the Windows file sharing system, and mm-hmm. so Windows being the 800-pound gorilla, both Mac and Linux have SMB locally, and it's usually called Samba, is the implementation that most companies use.
All right, I'll investigate to see if the server that I started to set up is operating on that format, and make a change if I need to.
Yeah.
Is the server you're setting up a Mac?
No. It actually was pieced together from old computer parts that my son had in his dental office when they upgraded. And I believe it's PC.
What OS is it running? The hardware almost doesn't matter. It's the OS that matters.
Let's see. What?
Just generically, Windows, Linux, Mac.
It's running TrueNAS.
TrueNAS. Hmm? Okay, that's a Linux distribution. Yeah. You would not be able to run a native Mac. Formatted drive on that.
But it likely has SMB loaded by default.
Right.
It may even have AFP, which is Apple Filing Protocol. Apple stopped using that a few years ago because everyone's using SMB.
Okay.
But if you do, so if you have you gotten as far as mounting the network drive on the Mac? And then you do a get info on that mount point and see what the file system says it is. Because I bet it's XFAT on the TrueNAS drive, because that's the native file system for Linux.
XFAT?
Yeah.
Is that
Extended File Allocation Table.
Okay. And that won't help me try to centralize all my images on the server then, on that drive.
Not using Apple's Photos app. You could use another image cataloging program, or just use the desktop finder.
Okay.
And if you put them all into different folders, you're probably better off.
Okay, yeah. Any suggestion on an alternate to the Photos app?
Not offhand. I know some people use Delicious Library. Because it can also track your books and your movies, and if you loan a movie to someone, it checks it out like a library.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, that's not something I do, but if it's got some other functions I need, that might be worth investigating.
Yeah.
Yeah, can't hurt to take a look. The other thing is, just for grins and giggles, are you paying for Amazon Prime?
Yes.
Sorry, was that a yes or a no?
Yes, it's a yes, unfortunately.
You have, don't say unfortunately, because as one of the perks of Amazon Prime, you have unlimited photo storage on their site.
And you access that through an app on your device.
Or through the web.
Or through the web, yeah.
Through my account, I assume.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, photos.amazon.com.
All right, I'll investigate that. That might be a good intermediate step mm-hmm. to move it all there, consolidate it, and then figure out where to put it.
Yeah. Google Photos used to be a good option until they started charging for storage space.
Right.
Right. And right now, at least, Amazon Prime gives you unlimited photo storage. So I would take advantage of that. It's certainly, at the very least, a backup for those photos you don't want to lose.
Okay. Good. All right. I'll go to work.
All right. Have fun.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's, you know, we've talked about this before. The legacy photos that you have from 15 different cameras, 22 different formats. My daughter just went to Disney World for a day. Because it's her birthday. And so she wanted, you know, we took her when she was eight. So she wanted to contrast those photos on her website.
Yeah.
The problem is, those photos are physical film.
Yep. That's a little hard.
We have to dig them out. We have to find the box they're in. We have to dig them out. We have to digitize them. And that's not going to be top of my list ever.
There was a big...
I don't know what city...
Yeah,
there was a big RC event in Georgia a couple of weeks ago, and one of the podcasts I follow, they posted a photo library on Flickr. And so, oh, I haven't used Flickr in a while. I went to look. Oh, I've got photos on Flickr of my own. I got the warning. So Flickr used to be free, and now it's only 1,000 photos for free.
Right.
I think I've only got 700, but there's three people following me. I don't know why.
Or who,
yeah.
Yeah, right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dan, somewhere from the wilds of Wisconsin. How are you, Dan?
I'm good. Well, except for my computer.
Oh, yeah.
I used to have Linux Mint 20.3, and it came up with a message that the end coming up to the end of life. So I installed Linux Mint 22.1. But now the links, when you go into the file manager and make a link, you make a link and draw it and put it on your desktop, the next time you boot it up, it doesn't stay there anymore. It used to on Linux Mint 20.3, it stayed there, and when you boot it up again, it was still there.
Is it not there at all, or is it moved?
No, it's there, but it says it's a dead link. It's got a lock. It's got symbols on a lock around it, and it doesn't work.
If you look at the properties of that link, do you see a path to the original file?
I've deleted them all already because they were dead. They didn't work, so I just deleted them. But you know, when you go into the file manager and you go into, I think it's view or something like that, you says it makes the link. And when you go to another hard drive where I keep all my files and highlight a file and say make a link to that and draw it, put it on my desktop, when you reboot it again, it doesn't work.
Okay, so wait, you're physically moving something or you're creating it on the desktop?
I'm creating a link from my disk where I have all my files.
Right.
On to the desktop on my Linux system. I draw it from the link to where it is on the storage database, and put it on the desktop, and it works. And it comes up and it works. But when you reboot your computer, it doesn't work anymore.
Is that external disk still connected to the computer?
Yes. Yes. I've even show them on the desktop as being there. I've got three external disks showing on my desktop that are connected, and one of them is the disk that's called storage where I keep all my files.
Sure. So, all right. So the way I normally do it is I will right-click on the file itself, and from the drop-down menu, I'll pick Create a Desktop Shortcut.
Well, that doesn't work either. I've done that. It says I can do it here again. Let's see here.
That should work.
Yeah,
so,
that should
work.
It doesn't.
We'll see what your error message is. That may help us.
Well, I'll go to documents, files. Okay, but I have to reboot this computer to make it not work again.
No, I understand that. So if you right click on the desktop,
No, it's on the file.
All right, so if you right-click on a blank space on the desktop, you get a drop-down menu. One of the choices there is Properties.
Maybe he doesn't have permission on something?
No, here, I've got a file in the file system.
I'm at a different place. Can we try my thing first?
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
Blank desktop, okay?
Okay, so at your desktop, right-click on a blank spot on the desktop, and you get a drop-down menu, select Properties.
It doesn't say Properties. It says Create Folder, Create New Document, Create New Launch Here, Add Desklets, Change Desktop Background, Display Settings, Open Terminal, Open as Root, are customized, and then it's got paste as grayed out. That won't work.
Oh, you.
What version of Linux are you on again?
22.1.
Yeah.
Maybe upgrade to 24?
Yeah, I don't think... I don't remember back that far, frankly.
This is the newest one they got. Linux Mint 22.1 is the one that's got...
Oh, 22.1. Excuse me. Yeah. Excuse me. Yes, it's not a year. It's just a number. I thought he said 20.1. And then I don't remember. I hate to say this, but this looks like something somebody's got to have eyeballs on. From that drop-down menu, you should be able to create a desktop launcher or a desktop short...
Create a new launcher here, it says. Create a new launcher.
Right. You should have launcher. You should have a shortcut.
Does he have to be an admin user?
No, he should be able to create it on his own desktop. But that's the way to do it. I'm not sure exactly how you're doing it. But the two ways to do it.
What I do is I go into the file manager.
Right.
File manager, I select the disk that has all my data on.
Right.
I go to documents. I select Excel files. I go to a file. I right click on it. It has a drop-down thing, and one of the things says make a link.
Yes.
Make a link. It says link to the file. I drag it over onto the desktop. There it stays, and it's a good file. I can open it up.
So instead of doing it in the file manager, just do it on the desktop. Try that.
Well, hold on a second.
You won't connect to that. To that disk on the desktop.
Hold on a second. If you right-click on that file, one of the choices also create a desktop shortcut?
No, it says open Linux Office Calc, open other applications, cut, copy, make link, rename, follow link to original file, move to trash, delete, compress, properties.
So when you click make a link, what do you see?
Now you see it's the exact same thing as the one I made. It's a duplicate of the one I have.
And it's already on the desktop?
Yeah, now I've got two of them.
And they will work until you reboot?
Until I reboot, and then it's dead. It won't work again.
And if you open up that dead link, it doesn't have...
you can't open it up because it's dead. It's not connected to anything.
No, you don't open the application it's connected to, but if you right-click on it and look at its properties or follow the link back to the original file, what does it show?
Well, you want me to reboot the computer and see?
Well, you'll have to call back. We've got some people on hold.
And when the link is dead and you try to open it and it's dead, are you getting an error message?
No, I'm getting nothing at all.
It should either open or give you an error message.
Yeah, it's very weird what's going on in your system. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you anyway.
Again, this is... There are some problems that you have to have eyeballs on the machine itself to fix, and I'm sorry. I wish we could help you.
Okay.
Or somebody listening might know what's happening.
Sorry, yeah. If anybody who's listening has had this problem, please call in and help us. We've disappointed all of Wisconsin at this moment. Sorry, Marshall.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Dan, I mean. I don't know. I don't understand why it's not working. It is the correct. He's doing it correctly. That is the way you create. I mean, every operating system is slightly different, but that is generically the way you create a desktop link. Right click, say make a link on the desktop, and then you should be able to follow it from then on. The fact that it's not surviving a reboot tells me that the desktop is not saving its configuration file, but I don't know how to tell Linux Mint to
now,
do that.
I've read things about hard links versus soft links, so maybe the drive that it's pointing to, you know, like change the drive letter. I know letters aren't a thing in Unix, but is that a possibility?
It's not impossible, but generally speaking, everything comes up in the same place with the same name.
Yeah.
It should be under slash media slash whatever name the drive has. So that shouldn't be different. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Pavilion, New York. What's up, Brian?
Gentlemen, how are you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Greetings from New York's wonderful southern tier.
It's a beautiful place.
It's almost time. It's almost time for summer.
That's right.
So, I'm a service user for Linux. Just happened to listen to the last call. It sounds to me like maybe a clean install might be something that, you know, like a complete, like Danban or something, a complete install.
Yeah, because something as core as making a shortcut not working, there's got to be something deep wrong.
Right, and it is possible that the problem is that he upgraded as opposed to did a clean install.
I've been using Linux for years, and I never have had much luck with an upgrade. Clean installs are always relatively flawless.
That's not incorrect, frankly.
Yeah.
So, USB on Pixels, USB-C. Yeah. A couple tricks that I've had because I'm just such a tightwad. You know, I mean, I just milk my equipment until it just dies. And one thing I found that helps out quite a bit. I don't think people think about it, a little spray of electronics cleaner. You know, don't soak it down. A little spritz of electronic cleaner in the USB port in your Pixel.
Yep.
That because, you know, you've gunk getting in there. I mean, if you look at your speakers, you can see they're nasty. You know, and just a little spray can help out. And one other thing I found out, too, is just go to, like, a potato chip and beer store and buy the cheapest, gnarliest cable you can find because they're not made very well. And, you know, you buy a couple of those, you're going to find one that's going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had like four people come in this week with stuff stuck in their port, and Tyler gets in there with his can of compressed gas and his cleaner and his toothbrush and his picks, and mostly is able to clean out, but just blowing the pocket lint out of it every now and then. See, the part of the problem is if you try to use compressed air, it often pushes it in farther,
right?
Because the hole is so small, it doesn't give it enough time to shoot itself out.
Right.
Yeah, and I would definitely wouldn't use like carburetor cleaner. Like,
small.
I'd definitely buy a bespoke electronics.
Yeah, we used
hook
to
it
go
up to a shop vac.
Yeah.
That's what we used to do.
To suck it out, yeah.
Yeah, we used to, on especially around the fans and, you know.
We're talking about Pixel phones.
Yeah, but it's still it all applies. When we used to get the computers in with all the USB ports on front and it, because of the dirt being flowing around, we'd go around with the shop vac and suck it out because, like you said, you put a blow on it, it's going to push it in there farther.
We used to get electronics cleaners at Goldcrest. And when they went out of business, we went and bought all they had left.
They're a sub shop now.
Yeah.
I miss that store. Even if you buy anything, just to go walk around and stare at stuff.
Well, exactly. Yep. So walk around and stare and drool.
Yeah, it's like, gee, I don't know what this does, but I want one.
You know? Right.
So anyway, yeah, I might, but just as an experiment, hopefully I'm young enough, I've had several Pixels in a row. I think I'm going to try a different brand next time. I'm due for another phone. My Pixel I'm on right now, I'm on flight with USB-C on it, too. You know, you jiggle the cord, whatever, but people don't realize how much, you know, the cord's wearing back, too.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Just trying to, and if you're using the same old junk day after day, just buying a new cord or turn them around. Like, you got one plugged into the wall, take the one that you never remove, switch it around.
And a lot of phones now have wireless charging, which is slower than wired charging, but it's convenient. So it's sometimes cheaper than replacing that port.
Exactly.
I do have the wireless, but I got to take it out of my case to do it, which is kind of a pain in the butt.
Right. Yep. All right, we got to take a quick break.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. You can give us a call. We will happily, we have another half hour of the show to get you on the line. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Fred from Henrietta on the line. What's up, Fred?
Hi, Nick. Let's see. The guy that was asking about the Linux not working on Linux Mint.
Yeah.
It's possible that his devices, if they're external USB hard drives, if they're not mounted, it breaks the Linux.
Yeah, good point. I asked him if it was connected. He said yes, but it's going to be mounted after it's connected. Yeah.
Well, what I've been finding in Linux, at least the latest version, Linux Mint, I'm using the same thing he is that if you leave a USB, anything USB plugged in, you know, a drive, it won't automatically mount. If you boot up, then plug it in, it mounts. Now, I've been creating similar things to him. Instead of putting links on the desktop, I put them as bookmarks inside the file browser. And again, they won't show up until you click on the device and mount it. Then all of a sudden, all your bookmarks come up. So I assume he's running into the same thing.
Good to know, maybe. Fred. Thank you. And I hope Dan is listening and that all of Wisconsin feels that we have vindicated ourselves.
Hey, one other quick thing. From last week, you were talking about Windows 11 hacks, I guess. You don't call them hacks. What else do you call them? But trying to get Windows 11 to work on non-compliant things. If people are just playing around and they want to play, it's perfect. You know, it's you can learn things. But if it's like your main machine and you're really counting on it, hacks work until they don't.
Exactly. You know,
it's kind of fun. I actually made an external, something called a Windows to Go drive, where you can actually install Windows on an external USB drive. I did that with the latest version of Windows 11, and now I can actually run Windows 11 on a 10-year-old laptop.
Right.
So it's fun, but it's going to work until it doesn't.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I can't tell you how many times I've heard people say, my machine is dead, can you help me? What's wrong with it? I don't know. I upgraded it to Windows 11, and now it doesn't work. Well, it's 15-year-old hardware. I'm not surprised. You shouldn't have done that.
It's surprising it was allowed to, because usually part of the installation is, I didn't know you could put 11 on non-compliant hardware.
Well, for a while you could, and then there were all the hacks that let you do it.
And they keep changing the requirements. So first you needed a TPM, and then you didn't need a TPM. Then you need TPM 2.0. 1.3 is not good enough.
Yeah, true. The thing is, though, is originally when the hacks that allowed you to use the really old CPUs, the reason that broke is they started using command set SSE 4.2.
Yep.
So anything before a Gen 5 Intel chip wouldn't work because it didn't have that command set. Now, the laptop I'm using Windows to go on is a Gen 5, and it does have that command set. Now, they said you can't use anything before Gen 8, at least with the Intel. Now, I assume that in the coming months or years, they're going to start using commands that'll break everything before Gen 8.
I mean, right.
That's the thing with a hack. It's fun, but it's, you know, not necessarily, you don't want to put all your eggs in that basket.
Right, exactly right.
And I also found
that's all I got.
That's good. Thank you, Fred.
I found a website called React, and I'm posting a link now, that lets you run basic Windows 11 in a web browser. So I've been looking for that for when people call with Windows questions, we can look.
Send that to me. I can use it myself.
And so you can play with it, see what it looks like without actually needing to install it on your computer. It just runs in a web browser. Let me see what system it's emulating here. Or does it just use my internal... No, it can't, because I'm running Apple Silicon.
Anyway, while you do that, we'll go back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Hello. Going back to the fraud and scam texts.
Yeah.
People have to realize when you have an Easy Pass, your credit card is there, and they don't let it drop below a certain level.
Yep.
So it's always paid.
And they auto-renew, yeah.
Yeah, they auto-renew, and boy, you don't have to use much for it to auto-renew.
It's $25. That's where they want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I took a trip, and it went down to $22.50, and they charged me.
Right, yep. Add it up again. Yep. And I don't spend $25 in a year.
Right.
So your easiest thing to do is just check to see when they took the money out of your credit card, and their website works real easy when you go on your profile. You can see if anything's caught up or not.
Yeah.
I must have got 6 or 7 of those texts.
Yep, whenever you get any of those texts about you're late on something, we're going to fine you, log into the website yourself and look at your own history.
Do not click on the links.
Yep.
Exactly. And like I said, Easy Pass, the only time they ever text you is when you first set up your account.
Yep.
That's it. Everything else via email.
Yep, exactly
that
right.
I've ever gotten.
You're right. Thank you, Mark.
Yep. Okay.
All right. Have fun.
You too. Thanks.
I did find a new app from New York State called called Thruway.
Ooh.
And it's a list. I'll post that one too in a minute. It's a list of all the toll roads on the Thruway and all the services. So you can see what restaurants are there.
Nice.
And I will also calculate a toll for you. So my biggest trip on the Thruway is Victor to Farmington, so 55 cents. It takes a long time to add up to $25.
Yeah, exactly. And they never let you get there because the minute you get below $22.50, they top you up.
Mm-hmm.
It's they're not missing a trick, these people.
Oh, no.
So,
Well, I get annoyed. Getting on the Thruway, there's big signs that say Easy Pass not accepted, call 1-800 whatever.
Right.
That was the point of Easy Pass, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and that's
it was.
What all those sensors are for, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. We took a trip to Buffalo a while ago, and there was a moment where I thought, oh, I'm going to need change.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not anymore.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. Are you still living in the 80s? No, you don't need change anymore.
Yeah, and the slowing down going through the terminals.
You don't even do that anymore.
Yeah.
I missed a toll entry on the New Jersey Turnpike once. There's 27 lines, lanes, and I get to the end of the turnpike, and there's a toll booth there. And so I said, well, I never got a ticket. So I go up to the guy, you're supposed to get a ticket. There was never a booth to get a ticket. Well, yeah, otherwise you just missed it. Okay, then tell me more. What toll is, please.
Yeah, right.
You saw my New York plate. You know I'm not a native.
Right, exactly.
Just love to harass.
Yeah.
Ah, the New Jersey Turnpike. I have memories. I won't say fond memories.
Yeah. Just memories.
In college, I broke down once on the Turnpike on a Friday afternoon.
Oh man.
And I was on the fast lane.
Because you're a college student, that's where you go.
Well, because we were heading to Florida. and so if you don't know the New Jersey Turnpike, there's two slow lanes and two fast lanes, but not every exit has both. So we watched the tow truck go past us on the fast lane, so then it could go past us on the slow lane so that it could get to us on the fast lane.
Yep.
And by the time they towed, and we were in Princeton, New Jersey, I should have gone to the college. By the time we got to the garage, you know, 5 o'clock Friday afternoon, every other garage was closed, and I blew the transmission. So we had to wait until Monday morning to get a new transmission. So we were stuck in New Jersey for the weekend. There goes our Florida trip.
Yeah. Plus, you're stuck in New Jersey.
Stuck in New Jersey. I've blocked out what we actually ended up doing in New Jersey. Is there anything to do in New Jersey?
No.
I think we were too far from the boardwalk to do anything interesting.
Well, I won't say there's nothing to do in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's neither here nor there. It's a lovely state. I have nothing against New Jersey.
Joyously.
I had a lovely month there one weekend. No, I did. I had a friend who lived in New Jersey, and I would go and visit her regularly. She was a nice lady.
What was that line from her? Do you know you have construction workers loading a ship here? Tell me something I don't know. Did you know they're using non-union labor?
Yes.
Mess
what movie?
With the
That's
Eraser with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Don't mess with the unions. So these bunch of Goombas show up with baseball bats and chains, and the guy standing there with an assault rifle, you know, boss, we got a problem.
Yeah.
Tell me you're not loading that ship without qualified union labor.
Yeah,
we're loading it with illegal guns, so no, we decided not to include the union.
Yeah, well, right.
Underrated movie.
It is an underrated movie. It's a lot of fun.
Unrealistic, but a lot of fun.
Well, and that's the thing. It was not badly written, and there were some moments of nice stuff in there.
Nice shotgun, a-hole.
Yeah, right.
Wait, no, that's right.
All right, let me read the Microsoft news. Microsoft's March 2025 patch Tuesday includes security updates for 57 flaws, including 6 actively exploited zero-day vulnerabilities. This patch Tuesday also fixed 6 critical vulnerabilities, all remote code execution vulnerabilities. Microsoft said on Monday that its legacy remote desktop, which has already been replaced on other platforms, will no longer be supported on Windows after May 27th of 2025. But you aren't losing any functionality here. You can still do tech support for your parents using built-in Windows functionality or the modern Windows app, which is somehow both the simplest and most confusing naming convention Microsoft's marketing team could have mustered. Yes, there's now a Windows app on Windows that lets you do remote Windows. Increasing the confusion, Windows has a built-in remote desktop connection app that will remain the only way to use remote desktop protocol connections after May 27th, but Microsoft will eventually incorporate that into the Windows app.
Because RDP is hopelessly broken and security flaws up the everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Microsoft's claim of a quantum computing breakthrough has attracted strong criticism from scientists, though Microsoft says its work is sound, and it will soon reveal data that proves it. Any day now. Honest. It's going to be the best. Microsoft showed off a quantum chip called Majorana 1, or maybe that's Majorana 1, that it said could pack a million qubits. Quantum computers with even a few hundred qubits are promised to be so powerful that your current computer would be akin to counting on your fingers, slowly. Henry Legge, a lecturer and theoretical physics at the University of St. Andrews in the UK, recently published a preprint critique that argues Microsoft's work, and I quote, is not reliable and must be revisited. There is no word yet if he's related to Harry Legge, or if Harry Legge is indeed a real person. Microsoft says that some USB printers will start printing random text after installing Windows updates released since January of 2025. The known issues affect Windows 10 version 22H2 and Windows 11 versions 22H2 and 23H2. But according to an update to the Windows Release Health Dashboard, the latest Windows 11 24H2 is not impacted. According to Microsoft, after installing the January 2025 Windows Preview update, released January 29th of 2025, or later updates, you might observe issues with USB-connected dual-mode printers that support both USB print and IP over USB protocols. You might observe that the printer unexpectedly prints random text and data, including network commands and unusual characters. So, are you receiving alien transmissions through your printer? Give us a call immediately. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Of course, if you are receiving those, Microsoft has no solution for you yet. They just want you to know that that's going to happen.
Fix a few problems, add a few problems that they're going to fix later.
Exactly right.
Maybe.
And when support ends this fall, they will stop bothering to fix anything.
And renaming their remote desktop Windows is the dumbest thing Windows has ever, Microsoft has ever done.
Not even Windows Remote.
Just Windows. So you can now run Windows. I am running Windows. No, the Windows app. I am running the Windows app. Who's on first?
Yeah.
I don't know. Third base.
Yep.
Like, I've read stories about, can you open Windows? Oh, I don't have any Windows in my office. Thanks. That's why my friend's computer works. Thank you. Hang up.
Back up the hard drive. I can't. It's already up against the wall.
Yeah. Send me a copy of the disk, and I get a photocopy.
Yep.
With a note stapled. Here you go.
Yep. I once saw a floppy disk, the old 5 1/4 inch floppy disks, stuck on a whiteboard with a magnet.
Yep.
And above it, somebody had written, whose disc is this? Underneath, I wrote, nobody's anymore.
Yep.
I saw one with a 5 1/4.
Yeah.
Pinned to a...
Yeah.
Yep.
With the pin going through the media.
Didn't you have a story where someone would keep coming back to you saying their disc quit working? And
the disc quit. What happened was we sold a database program worth several hundred dollars to a guy, and he would come back and say, the discs are blank. So I gave him another copy. He went home, came back, said the discs are blank. So I got a third copy, and I checked. And indeed, the discs were blank because I checked them each time. I took the third copy, and I checked the discs myself, and they were good. He comes back. He says, so I walked him out to his car. He puts them down. I said, whoa, what is that? He said, oh, that's a new thing I just got. It's called a car phone. I said, does it ring while you're driving home? Oh, almost always. I'm a sales guy.
In the olden days, there was a giant mechanical bell that had a giant magnet.
Right, and that magnet would pulse multiple times a second, which is exactly what would erase a hard drive.
Yeah. Yep.
So I said, put these in the back seat. Put them in the back seat.
Away from the magnet.
And he picked them up to put them in the back seat, and no sooner had he done that than the phone rang. I said, if we had waited another 10 seconds, this set would have been blank, too.
He's hanging it the magnet on the filing cabinet, saying important.
Yep, exactly right. those days are gone. Nowadays, it's thumb drives, which we can lose.
Folding a 5 1/4 disc in half to make it fit in a 3 1/2 inch slot?
Yep.
We had someone, some of the early PCs had two floppy drives.
Yes.
There was a gap between them. Someone was able to shove a disc in there.
Or more than one.
CD drives, the slot-loading CD drives that were popular. They got one in, okay. Got the second one in. Well, that's pretty good. Somehow they got a third one in. See, now we got to take the computer all the way apart, take the drive all the way apart.
Yep.
We found money. So apparently the kid liked to shove things in the slot. So there were a bunch of coins in there, too, in addition to the three discs.
Oh, talk about shoving stuff in slots. The one story that I had... was a guy brought the computer in, and it was an extra one at work, and he took it home to let his kid use. Okay. And he went in, kid had it for a while, and all of a sudden, dad had to read a 5 1/4 floppy.
Oh, no.
And he said, all right, so he went into his kid's room to use just to read it, couldn't get the 5 1/4 floppy in. So he brings it on into the shop and says, there's something wrong with this drive in it. Okay. So we had to open up the little drawer. And we had, at that time in our shop, we had long needle nose pliers.
Oh, yes.
So we're looking in there with the flashlight. So go in there and all of a sudden pull out this wrapper. That's a wrapper to a condom.
Very nice. Very, very nice.
At least the condom wasn't in there.
Yeah.
So the guy called. So what was wrong with the drive? I said, you're not going to believe it.
Yeah.
He goes, well, tell me, you know, how much is this going to cost me? I says, probably a good talk with your son because we found a condom in there. Silence. We're going to have a talk.
Yeah. Yep.
I thought, gee, I'd love to be a fly on the wall at that dinner table.
At least he's safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the important part right
no,
there.
No, I was glad I didn't find the condom part of it.
Well, there's that. Yeah, yeah. Right. Right.
We had a golf tee drop into the paper feed of a printer. From an upper shelf, and the paper jams all the time. It just won't feed through. And so we look at it. Oh, yeah, here, that'll do it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We didn't have to take it apart.
Right. Just take out the thing. I've seen at the Big Ivory Tower, we had a guy who said, oh, I need the old, I've got this old terminal sitting on the floor, and it won't work. So we opened it up, and there was a mouse nest in it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I used to... Remember that I had that case?
Yes, you
dirty
did.
Dirty computer
yeah,
pages.
Yeah. Oh, with all the bugs and all that was in it?
Oh, I read one. Woman brings a computer in saying it's filled with cockroaches. And the text, you know, they don't really want to work on them, but they agree. And so they take it outside, open it up, and it's fine. So that they call, and then the woman's son comes in and says, yeah, I was high when I told her that.
Yeah.
So now how much do I owe you to not tell my mom?
Yeah, right. Well, there's an extra zero.
Yeah.
Well, the best one was I went to a law firm one time and to work, you know, do maintenance work. And the girl up there was new, and she was trying to change the toner on the laser printer. And that's back in the day, you sit there, you grab it, and you shake it around, and then pull out this tab.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes.
And she wound up shaking it like crazy, you know, and I'm watching her, you know, because I'm over in this corner working on the server. And she pulls out the tab, and all of a sudden I hear this loud scream, and all this black powder is going all over this carpeting, which was like a tan and a light blue. And
not anymore.
Shook up a little too much, maybe.
And it was going all over her, and she's moving around quickly and just spread more of the dirt toner all over the place.
Yep.
I just set up a new printer this week, and it didn't come with one of those pull tabs.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, how in the world did they ship that without a pull tab? And why is there not toner everywhere? Are they making the cartridges better?
Yeah.
Apparently they are, because I got one that had a little plastic shield on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that was it.
Yeah, this didn't even have anything. And it was already in the printer. I've seen them where they don't ship it in the printer.
Right.
And you pull it out. But, yeah, I'm looking. There's no pull tab. There's no things to take off of it like there always is.
Put
it back together, print it fine.
Unless they're putting some type of trap door that it's...
Yeah, it's got to be what it is.
Well, it's printed on the box.
So,
printed on the box is this end up. So just don't tip it over. It'll be fine.
I guess so. I guess so. But, yeah, we've seen some amazing things. I told you I had a person call me back when I was at Chase. And we owned all of the computers for whatever reason. So when somebody called, we could just... quickly make a change, not have to go through requisitioning or anything like that. So I got a call, and their monitor wasn't working. And at the time, we were transitioning from amber monitors to color monitors. So I said to the person on the phone, is it a color monitor? And she said, well, it's sort of beige.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll bring one of each. That's much easier. And it was. And then we had a person who killed a monitor, killed a second monitor, killed a third monitor. Turns out she'd hung a plant over the monitor, and every time she watered it...
Oh, the water dripping?
Water dripping in it. How do I tell if my mouse is wireless? Does it have a wire coming? Don't give me any of that technical talk!
Right.
Well, I had one...
Well, I made my mouse wireless by cutting the wire off. Why doesn't it work?
Yeah, right.
Going back quite a bit, I had this law firm, and this is back in the day before the networks and all that, and we did cables from one to the other. And this one woman was you know, kind of not really into computers. So, you know, we hooked them all up, and she kept saying, well, this is making my computer go slower. So what she was doing was unhooking one end, because, you know, they were T's.
Right.
And it go from one office to the other to the other, and it had to be like in a daisy chain. And she unhooked it, and people were complaining. What's wrong? You know,
now you have two unterminated networks, and neither works.
And he's going, I thought you said you came in and fixed it. I go, I did. And sure enough, we had to go through it, check it out. She goes, well, I don't like it. It's slowing down. He goes, did you pay for this computer? No. He says, leave it alone. Yeah. You do your work on it.
Yeah.
Or there will be consequences.
That's the way it works. I had a place where I was doing cubicles. And we put all the computers up, and one of them was intermittent. And it turned out whoever had run the wire, and it wasn't me, put it under one of the cubicle walls. They were movable cubicle walls. So when the person in that cubicle sat back against their wall, crimped the cable and cut everybody's network access off. All right, we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I particularly am thrilled when somebody calls in and gives us a hand with a question we've had or a new perspective on a question we've answered. I love that. So thanks to all of you. Again, check soundbites.org/lounge this week. And if you're an Ask Nick member, also check the members area. We are likely going back to trying the soundbite, the Mastermind Lounge for a bit. So we'll see you next week on Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Be good to one another, will you?